Howdy, everyone, and thank you again for tuning in to the Jeffersonian Tradition. Before we get started, I have a couple of things to go over. I want to keep bringing y'all high-quality content, but I cannot do that without your support. So please, help buy me a cup of coffee every month and join the Ward Republic by chipping in $5 per month through the supporting listener link in the show notes page. I am not part of a fancy podcasting network, and I don't like the restrictions that come along with certain advertising campaigns, so I am coming to y'all with my hat in my hand. So please help me keep this show going and keep it independent by doing your part and chipping in. If you're not comfortable with a recurring contribution model, I do also have a Cash App profile for the show, so one-time contributions can be sent there, and all of this information is listed in the show notes page as well. And don't forget that Ward Republic membership includes a monthly video conference with myself and the other Ward Republic members. And support monetary freedom today and head over to our sponsor at www.defythegrid.com to purchase your gold bags. I have an affiliate link in the show notes page, and if you use it, I will get a 1% commission, so that'll also help keep the show going. So click on my link in that show notes page and fuel monetary decentralization today. And if you aren't on MeWe yet, then seriously, what are you waiting for? Unlike a certain other social media platform, MeWe respects the right to free speech and offers a privacy bill of rights. So if you'd like to be a member there, then download the MeWe app and search for me at the username Mr. Jeffersonian. The show group is private, so we must be contacts before I can send you the group invite. With all of that fun stuff out of the way, let's now turn our attention to the topic for today's episode.
Fellow citizens, thank you again for your time and for tuning in to the Jeffersonian Tradition. Today's episode is going to be a little bit of a potpourri. What we're going to do is take a look at the 2022 in review, or 2022 year in review, and then we're going to break that down in a couple of ways. I'm going to do a review of the show and my perception of that, and then my review of my personal goals, because I am a big, big believer in setting goals for the year and then trying to follow through on those. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit more about my adventures in Coffee Land. Unfortunately, that endeavor did not work out, but we'll get more in detail on that as we move forward. And then I'm just going to kind of spell out what the 2023 goals are going to be for the show, as well as my 2023 personal goals, because again, I am a huge believer in setting goals for yourself and trying your very best to follow through on those. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with 2022 in review. So for the show, we had 6,555 total plays. We added two net new Ward Republic members, which is awesome. The show generated $415.85 in revenue on 67 published episodes for the year, so not too bad. And then we started the year focused on the Southern Agrarian view of the megacorporation takeover of the American economy. Again, they were writing these books back in the 1930s. So we started the year kind of focused on that and what the agrarians saw and how they thought we could fight it. And then throughout the year, we uncovered more of that old Jeffersonian or agrarian belief system by exploring the writings of R.L. Dabney. And then we actually ended the year going all the way up through Richard Weaver, who was kind of like the last really prominent disciple of that tradition. And then we also spent a good chunk of time looking at the thoughts of Northern secessionists such as Timothy Pickering, Josiah Quincy, and Theodore Sedgwick. So we covered the Louisiana Purchase. We looked at what they were saying during the War of 1812 and kind of the aftermath of the Embargo Act. So we covered a lot of ground in 2022, and I'm very pleased with that because we really discussed in detail some critical pieces of American history. And so throughout 2023, it's going to be a little bit different. Again, we'll get to that more in depth a little bit later on, but it's going to be a little bit different because I'm kind of starting to feel now that the real linchpin of American history is that Jacksonian period, because that's when you have the founding generation or the last of the founding generation die off, and you have this second generation of Americans who are really wrestling and struggling with the thought or the question, will we conserve what our forebears gave us, which is a federal republic or a decentralized republic, or will we take the path of Europe and try to create top-down nationalized nation states or unitary nation states? So that to me is where you have the critical moments of American history in terms of really seeing that shift away from Jeffersonianism and those who fought to prevent that. You have John C. Calhoun, the nationalist, kind of become John C. Calhoun, the champion of states' rights. You have Henry Clay, the champion of states' rights, kind of take the opposite direction and become Henry Clay, the nationalist. So it's very interesting to me studying this period, and that is something I hope by the end of 2023 that we're able to talk about more in depth. But again, we'll get to that a little bit more in detail later on in the episode. So now 2022, for me personally, was a jam-packed year. I mean, our household was extremely busy this year. The highlight of 2022 obviously came for us on October 14th when Little Miss Jeffersonian was born, and that was actually the day after my 30th birthday. So it was a wild time. I turned 30. I'm still not sure how I feel about that. And then my daughter was born the very next day. So it was a great time. I did not have fun in the hospital. I'm not going to lie about that. We spent about 3 days in the hospital after she was born, but her being born and then us getting to come home, it has been an absolute blast getting to be her daddy. That has been such a fun adventure so far, such a fun experience so far. And then throughout the year, I never really told y'all about this, but starting 2022, I was not happy where I was as far as my weight and just kind of my overall health in general. So I made it a goal to try to lose some weight. Initially, I wanted to lose about 60 pounds, and lo and behold, I actually met that and surpassed it. So for 2022, throughout the year, I actually lost roughly 90 pounds, and I would still like to lose a little bit more, but again, that's something we'll talk about for 2023. So it was wonderful because I feel a lot better. I had started having some nerve issues in one of my legs. That thankfully seems to have subsided for now that I've lost so much weight. I'm not really having that pain anymore, which is wonderful. And then while I did not officially complete the last course until just a couple of days ago, I also made substantial progress in 2022 on completing my bachelor's degree in accounting. And I aim to be starting the master's program in April. And again, we'll get more to that when I start talking about goals for 2023. But that was pretty awesome. When I first started courses, I didn't really know how long it would take me to complete the bachelor's degree. I got my associates at the end of 2021, I believe. It was December of 2021, and then I started working on my bachelor's level classes in February of 2022, or actually March of 2022, I'm sorry. So to be able to basically complete it by the end of 2022 in just a nine-month span, that was pretty awesome. I felt like that was really good progress towards that goal. And like I said, I officially wrapped up the bachelor's program. Actually, I think it was on like January 4th I took my last test. So now I'm just waiting for everything to be certified and the degree to be issued. So I'm very excited and pleased with that. And then since my coffee shop endeavor unfortunately did not work out, I am thinking very seriously about starting my own online-based bookkeeping business. More to come on that as things unfold. And again, that's more of a 2023 thing. I mean, technically, I kind of started thinking about that on New Year's Eve, but that's something more for 2023. And then lastly, for 2022, I finally gave up energy drinks pretty much entirely. I had the last one of 2022 in February, and I did not touch the stuff for the rest of the year. So as I've mentioned to y'all, I actually do have a caffeine sensitivity, but I love Monster Energy drinks. I like coffee too, but coffee, it's easy because you can get decaf. They don't really make decaffeinated energy drinks though. Monster used to, but then they stopped producing it. I don't know if it just didn't sell very well or what. But I had my last energy drink of 2022 in February, and then, like I said, I did not touch the stuff again for the rest of the year. I was very excited about that because Monster was a terrible habit that stuck with me from my days in the Army. So it was nice to finally be able to sort of break that addiction. And now let's talk about the adventures I had in Coffee Land. And, you know, I only mentioned this briefly on the last episode because it was consuming so much of my time. And as I stated in this episode, unfortunately, this endeavor did not work out. But I did want to let y'all know kind of what happened and what was going on and why I was kind of running around like a chicken with my head cut off because the time frame was so condensed. So my favorite coffee shop was within walking distance of my house. Unfortunately, at this point, it's actually closed. Somebody else did buy it. I don't know if they're going to be able to make it successful. We'll talk about that some more. But so what happened was it was randomly announced on the coffee shop's Facebook page that they were going to be going out of business by the end of the year. December 31st was supposed to be their last day of operation. So the issue was there was a new player in town who had bought the lot that this place sat on. And I finally did get for certain confirmation who bought that. It's a gas station chain called Come and Go. I don't know exactly how big Come and Go is. I know out here they're kind of a big deal. They're like all over the place. They may be in Texas, but I never saw them. Like in Louisiana, I never saw them. And honestly, in my part of Texas, I never saw them. But I do think they have a footprint in parts of Texas. So they're a somewhat regional chain, but in the markets they're in, they are a pretty big player. So Come and Go bought this parking lot, and I don't know if they were willing to negotiate with the original owner or what, because he didn't seem to know who actually bought it. I only found that out after everything was kind of said and done. I finally got a response from their real estate team. And when I asked them, like, hey, would you guys have been open to renegotiating this lease? At that point, magically, they stopped responding. So I don't know exactly what happened between the previous owner and Come and Go, but that's what happened between me and Come and Go as I was trying to see, was I going to be able to keep this spot, by any cost, or is it just, hey, we don't want you here, get out. So that's kind of what happened. Now, the employees were very upset, very, very upset, and understandably so, because, like I said, this announcement was made on a Saturday on the shop's Facebook page. I don't have Facebook anymore, but my wife does, and she's the one who saw it, and she alerted me basically right away. But that announcement was made, I believe, on December 17th, and the employees actually did not find out until the day before on Friday the 16th. So the employees were extremely upset. And going into this, I initially thought when I first offered to purchase it that my biggest challenge was going to be trying to find a location. Well, then come to find out with the employees being so mad, I didn't know if I was going to have anybody to come to work, and I did not have the willpower to go and staff this thing by myself for, 8 to 10 hours a day. I just didn't have that wherewithal, and I'm not ashamed to admit that, because I don't relish anybody who is that much of a workaholic where they're working that many hours per day, basically every day. So then I was like, okay, well, if I can't get employees, then I'm not really going to move forward with this. That wouldn't be a wise use of the resources that we have. So what I did was I scheduled a meeting with all of the employees. I went there one day and just kind of observed the manager and assistant manager in their operations. And then I talked with them, and through them kind of got it scheduled to where we could all have a big group meeting where I could tell the employees, like, hey, this is what I want to try to do if you guys will just stay. So we went to a little Mexican restaurant, and I had such a fun time that night getting to know all of the employees on a little bit more personal level. Some of them I knew, from a customer standpoint. Some of them I knew already because they knew me. Like when I would go there, they were like, oh, hey, it's the Milky Way guy. So the Milky Way is the drink I got. They were like, oh, hey, it's the Milky Way guy. You want your usual? Yeah, absolutely. I'd be insulted if you didn't. So, but getting to know them on a more personal level and kind of seeing what their motivational factors were and what kept them coming to work, that was actually a very fun night. And despite how all of this turned out, I'm very glad that I had the opportunity to get to meet with all of them. So as we were talking, though, the employees, they weren't asking for a lot. Their primary concern was the way in which all this was handled, where it was just kind of sprung on them at the last minute. Like, the previous owner told them one day, and then the next day everybody knows, and now it's like, oh my gosh, what are we supposed to do for a new job? Now, there were a couple of them who had been there for a while, like the manager and assistant manager. They wanted a little bit more than the newer folks, which honestly, to me, that's to be expected. But their concerns were more along the lines of, we need something for retirement because, we're kind of getting to the point in age where that is a realistic concern for us. We realize now we're not going to be in the workforce forever. And so even then, though, they weren't asking for anything major. So the newer employees, they wanted a little bit more money. I was going to bump them up to $14 per hour as a base rate. Like, I was going to make sure everybody was at least at that base rate. And then we were still going to accept tips. So that's something I think that they really appreciated, at least based on my interactions with them, they really appreciated that. And then to address the concerns of the more tenured employees, I told them, I said, look, I cannot give you everything that some of these other employers can, because one of them, the manager, actually had interviewed with a regional internet service provider, and they were obviously going to be able to offer a much more robust benefits package than what I would have been able to. But what I was going to do was start a simple IRA for them. The way that works is you as the employer you have two options, right? One is you can give them a 3% match on any contributions they make. Or if you don't want to do that, then two is you can just give them a 2% contribution regardless if they contribute or not. And that's the path that I was going to take. That way, for the younger workers, if they stayed with me for 1 year, 5 years, you know, 6 years, 10 years, they would walk away with something. So even people who are like 16, 17 years old, if they leave me at age 22, even if they didn't put anything in there, they would still have something that was kind of built in as a backdoor savings for them. That was my outlook. And a simple IRA, it also gives the participants a lot more flexibility on what they can invest in. So if y'all were not aware, when you're an employer and you set up a 401k plan, especially if you're a small business, you go somewhere, let's say like Fidelity, and you say, hey, Fidelity, I have this many employees and I would like to participate in a 401k plan. Well, Fidelity only has one 401k plan for small businesses, and it's called their Safe Harbor plan. And it's pretty much, it's set in stone. There's no customization options whatsoever. And Fidelity gives you a pre-curated list of mutual funds that you can invest in. And there's only like five of them. So I didn't like the rigidity of that because I think it's better to have more investment options. Not that mutual funds are a bad way to go, but I just like having more flexibility. So with a simple IRA, the employee is actually in complete control. Once you start making the contributions into there, and if they make their own contributions, they are in complete control of those funds. They can invest them really however they see fit. If they want to buy shares of Apple, hoorah. You know, if they want to buy shares of Tesla, great. If they want to buy shares of whatever, they can do that. GDX, if they want to be kind of tied into the gold mining market, they can do that. So I like the flexibility. Now, for transparency's sake, a simple IRA is also much cheaper from an administrative standpoint. With the 401k plan, it was going to cost me about $3,000 a year. With the simple IRA, any sort of administrative stuff is actually just passed straight through to the employee, but it's negligible. They don't have like an annual account management fee or anything like that. It would be more so if they chose to invest in mutual funds, then they would be directly responsible for paying the management fees there, which in most cases are less than 1% of their assets. So it would not have been anything major. And again, that's something that would have saved me about $3,000 a year from an employer standpoint. So then I was also going to offer a sort of healthcare plan. It would not have been traditional health insurance. I was looking at giving them a DPC plan. And we have a DPC provider here in Colorado Springs. My daughter and I actually use this place. And I was going to offer that as a benefit that the company would have paid for to any employee who stayed. And it would have only cost $69 per month per employee. So at the time that I was trying to undertake all of this, I was kind of projecting to have maybe seven employees. So total cost for me would have been, you know, roughly about $420 per month. So they were happy with that. They were happy with that. So they were not asking for much, in my opinion. They were not asking me to guarantee them a 6% 401k match and fully paid for health insurance. They just wanted some bare level of benefits. And the little bit that I was realistically going to be able to do seemed to be enough. They interacted with me, and I kind of explained to them my outlook on how capital should interact with labor and kind of my philosophy of paternalism. They didn't really understand what that term meant, so I just explained to them, like, well, hey, if you work for me, I kind of feel like I have obligations to you beyond just paying your wage. I think that if you're my employee, at a bare minimum, I should try to get you this, this, and this. And they said, oh, okay, well, yeah, you know, we can see that. But then I told them too, I said, but, you know, you got to understand that comes with certain expectations that you also have obligations to me. So I expect people not to call out if they're not actually sick. I expect people not to miss work at just the drop of the hat, this, that, and the other. And they were like, oh, yeah, no, we totally understand that. So, you know, who knows how things would have played out in practice. But as I explained that to them and also told them my influences for that came from people like John C. Calhoun, came from people like John Taylor of Caroline, they were also interested in hearing more about that. They actually, when we had that meeting towards the end of it, they eventually just got to a point they openly asked me, well, what are your political beliefs? Because you're saying a lot of stuff we haven't really heard before. So what are your political beliefs? And so we had a great conversation about the Jeffersonian tradition. the old Southern outlook on paternalism and how that kind of ties into how you interact with your labor force, this, that, and the other. So that was a fun conversation to have because, again, they had never heard it before. But after that meeting, there were some things that kind of started to go, I guess, a little bit awry behind the scenes between me and the previous owner. So from the get-go, I had some issues with the financial statements that I saw. I'm not at liberty on the show to really kind of go into the weeds on that, but I had some issues with the financial statements. And suffice it to say, the costs that were reported on these statements were just completely out of control. So I knew if I was going to do this, realistically, I was going to have to raise prices by a minimum of 10%. And that's before I had the full picture. I knew that I was going to have to raise prices by a minimum of 10%. So then as things kind of started to unfold and I started getting more information about the cost of their orders and what it would look like to get a lease for a new spot, I started having some major, major concerns about the long-term viability of the business. And my wife did as well. And honestly, I was so emotionally invested, I was kind of willing to take the risk, but my wife was not. So honestly, my wife kind of kept me grounded throughout all of this. I did get a little bit upset with her. I'm not going to try to hide that, but I'm glad that she did that because we went and talked to a business consultant the day before things fell through. We went and talked to a business consultant and they told us if we paid what was being asked for the business, basically we would be making the dumbest decision of our lives. So we ended up not being able to do it, but just to kind of give you guys a picture of the long-term viability, I think what's happening right now is going to totally destroy almost all small businesses in the state of Colorado, unless they're extremely high margin. But for small independent coffee shops, honestly, maybe even small restaurants, like family-owned restaurants, I don't think that these businesses will be able to withstand the next five-ish years. Main reason for that is the state minimum wage. Our state legislature, in their bountiful wisdom, and I say that very sarcastically, pegged our state minimum wage to inflation, I think, in 2020 or in 2021. And so what that's going to do from December 31st of 2022 to January 1st of this year, labor cost increased across the board 9%. Well, obviously, your larger businesses, Dunkin' Donuts, for example, or Dutch Brothers, they can absorb that. That's whatever. They can absorb that and they can pass the cost through to the customer to some extent, but they won't have to raise prices as much as a small business would. So with that being said, if wages are going to go up, let's say if inflation stays at 5%, if wages go up for 5% per year for the next 2 years, that means in a three-year window, your labor costs have increased over 20%. So now you're adding a whole new element and it's like, okay, well now, even if I increase prices 20% on my drinks, then it's going to, you know, all that's doing is buying me time. In 3 years, I'm going to have to do this again. Pair that with how the commercial real estate market works. And this is something I'm glad that I know it now, but I did not know it going into this. But with commercial lease agreements, apparently it's very common practice for them to include something called auto escalators. So just to give you an understanding of what that means is every single year, you're basically forced to agree to a rent increase if you want to get the contract. So out here, normally what they do is they'll do it based on square footage. So the particular location that I was looking at, like literally the only one who responded and said, hey, we have availability and it would be somewhat affordable. They said, okay, well, look, our space is 919 square feet. And then if you need to do renovations, we'll give you an allowance. That's something else I didn't know. They'll basically front you the money to make renovations because the spot I was looking at, it used to be a massage parlor. So I was going to have to tear out at least one of the breakout rooms to kind of open up the space to put in a counter and things of that nature and really get it suitable to use as a coffee shop. So they were like, okay, well, look, we'll give you X amount of dollars for an allowance to make renovations, but then we'll just bake it into your rent. So they're basically giving you a loan and then you pay them back month to month with your rent. So with that, it was going to be prohibitive. After about year three, it was going to be prohibitive because basically what they do, at least around here, because the real estate market is still so insane, is every year your escalator will say, okay, next year, you're going to pay us $1 more per square foot per year. So if it's 919 square feet, then obviously each year your rent's going up by $919 over the course of a year. So by year five, that cost has now jumped up over $4,500 per year. So if my rent, for example, was going to be $1,650 per month in year one, then under this scenario, by year five, I'm now having to pay $2,033 per month. You combine that with labor cost and the fact that his cost overall, like just for his goods, were completely out of control. I just don't see how anybody's going to be able to make that business viable unless they cut basically all of their labor force, trim it down to we're only going to be open in peak hours, and figure out some other ways to get their cost under control, because that was something that was just very, very much a point of concern for me. Even at the height of my emotional investment in this, that was something that stood out to me like a sore thumb, is that the costs were just completely out of control. So then you throw in these other factors, and then, like I said, we go and talk with the business consultant, and they told us basically just don't do it. Don't do it, at least not for what's being asked. If you want to try to make it work, you know, you basically offer him significantly less than what he's asking. So things kind of broke down from there. The very last day when the guy called me and told me he wasn't going to move forward with me, allegedly somebody else was willing to buy this place in cash and did not make it contingent on finding a new location. That was something else for my wife and I. We had some requirements that maybe were unrealistic. I don't really think so, because it was already an established business. But for my wife and I, we, at a bare minimum, needed it to be positive on its cash flow month to month, and I never could get assurance that that was the case for 2022. Per his statements, it was positive in 2021, but for 2022, I never did get that information, and I didn't have warm fuzzies that it was. So we needed it to be positive on its cash flow, and then we also made anything that we did contingent on finding a spot. So even though he and I had sort of agreed in preliminary talks, I told him, I was like, hey, all of this is contingent on us being able to find a location. So this new buyer, allegedly, like I said, they were willing and able to offer cash and did not make it contingent. So we will see where it goes from here, because as of right now, the little hut is still sitting there for the time being, but it is completely closed down. Everything's been cleaned out of there, and at this point, that business no longer exists. So, and I'm honestly, I don't really think, if this takes more than about 3 months, just based on my interactions with the employees, I don't think any of them are going to come back, because they can all find something that will be better. A lot of them, they did love working for a small business. They liked the personal nature of that. But at the same time, you know, they got to look out for their best interest. And if this takes too long and they find other jobs, I just don't see them coming back after that point. But we'll see. We'll see. I am very sad about this, though, because like I said, I think all of our little small shops like that are going to be in danger over the next 3 to 5 years. And speaking of that, there is one other shop that's within walking distance of my house. I've only been able to go there once because they're almost never open. But even they, right after my favorite one went under, even they made a Facebook post that my wife found saying that now they're in trouble, a pretty severe trouble of going under if they don't get more business. So we shall see. I will tell you, the one time I went to that place, it was not nearly as good as my favorite shop. So that's another reason I haven't really gone back, in addition to them hardly ever being open. But We will see where it goes from here, but I really do think the state has pretty much dealt a death blow to our small businesses, because, and I tried to explain this to the previous owner too, the day before he told me he wasn't going to move forward. When I started telling him about some of my longer term concerns, I told him, I said, look, man, if I get to a point where I have to charge $8 a drink just for me to break even, I'm not going to be able to compete with Dunkin' Donuts and Dutch Brothers and Starbucks, because we have each one of those within a 5 mile radius of where I live and where that shop was. So that's where I don't see how anybody can make this viable without some drastic, drastic measures and corner cutting. And at that point, are you going to be able to retain your customers? Because now maybe your product tastes different, or you increased your price, this, that, and the other. And that was something else, too, is that the previous owner had severely underpriced his drinks. Pricing was adequate, I would say, up until 2021. But he, from there, he never really responded to inflation with price increases the way that he should have. So he was still severely underpriced compared to the other local shops, because a lot of the other local shops around here, because there's one other one that's within walking distance, and then there's actually one other one that's within driving distance, or like short driving distance. And those two, they're already up to like $6.50, $7 per drink. But based on the pressures that they're going to be facing with the state law changes and the commercial lease agreements, they will get to a point, all of them, where they have to charge $8 or $9 per drink just to break even. And when you get to that point, and now you're forced to compete head-to-head with places like Starbucks, Dutch Brothers, and Dunkin', who can get by, because of their economy of scale, only charging $6.50 a drink, where are most people going to go? I would like to think that people care enough about supporting small business and kicking out corporate that they would still go to the small shops. I would like to think that. But the very unfortunate reality of the situation is most people are just going to go where they can get the cheapest thing. And if these other places can also do rewards programs where people get either free or discounted drinks ever so often, that's just one more thing that you're having to compete with as a very small business that it almost seems like an insurmountable challenge. So I'm very sad about this because, like I said, it's not just the fact that my favorite shop is now gone. It really does seem like all of these small independent shops are going to be gone and give way to Starbucks and yada yada. So that's devastating. That is absolutely devastating. And going back to the Southern Agrarians, that's exactly what they talked about in Who Owns America, is you get these corporations who come in, they get intertwined with the state, and they get favorable legislation in a backhanded way or in a backdoor manner. So, you know, allegedly corporations don't want to pay people more. But, you know, we look back at 2016 and actually who was the biggest cheerleaders for increasing the federal minimum wage to at least $15 per hour? It was places like Wells Fargo, places like Chase, Bank of America. All of your big corporations were saying, yeah, we're all about this, because then they don't have to compete for the labor. So it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And like I said, I this is something that has made me extremely sad. But getting to the next part of this whole endeavor, I do want to tell y'all what it was like trying to deal with the banks and credit unions to try to get some funding to cover the short-term stuff. So when I say short-term cost, I'm talking about things like the first 2 weeks of payroll, the first month's rent, and basically first month's utility. So, you know, in total, I didn't think I would need more than about $15,000 to $20,000 for that. So I go to my personal credit union that we use for our personal finances, and I tell them what's going on. And they say, okay, well, yeah, we can look at getting you a business checking account. Okay, great. Well, they want you to have an LLC or some form of business organization where you have your own EIN, right? So if you ever go to open a bank account for business, if you try to do it as a pure sole proprietorship where there's no legal distinction between you and the business, they almost are unwilling to work with you. And there are certain things that maybe make it to where they can't do that. But even to the extent that they can, they are very hesitant because they want some sort of distinction there. So talking with them, I also was like, okay, well, look, if I get an LLC, then I would like to look into getting a business line of credit under the LLC's name. Well, see, here's the rub. They want to put you through the ringer. Go set up your LLC. Go spend the money to do that, which that cost me, because I did set up an LLC. That cost me, I think, about $350. But they want you to go through the ringer and get all that stuff set up. And then they tell me after the fact, oh, by the way, because you don't have at least 2 years of tax returns under the business with you as the owner, we're not even going to consider giving you any credit in the business name. If we extend any credit, it's going to be in your name personally. Well, obviously that sends my risk through the roof, right? So if you can borrow under the business name, and this is not to say that I would try to Welsh on my debt payments, but if you can borrow under the business name, then you have certain protections from creditors. So if I had borrowed under the coffee shop's name or my LLC's name, then they can only go after the business assets. They would not have been able to come after my house, my vehicles, anything like that. But in this case, they're like, okay, well, go get your LLC, but as far as lending, we're only going to do that to you personally. Well, then at that point, okay, if I, you know, let's say if I do go off and take 20 or 30 grand in debt to do this and things go belly up, well, then they're coming after me, the individual, and not going after the business, even though they made me set up the LLC. That actually, that frustrated me. That day is probably the most mentally defeated I felt throughout the entire process, because I'm just thinking to myself, like, look, I don't want to take this on if I don't get any sort of protections from creditors, which, again, I'm not saying that I would have just refused to pay my debts. It's just, give me enough time. Yes, I will try to make everybody whole, but I don't want you coming after my personal assets if you're forcing me to go set up an LLC anyway. So that was very frustrating. And then kind of tying this back to the rent ordeal, that was something else. If the business had gone belly up, the real estate groups would have come after me personally, because I would have had to have signed that also in my name personally. It would not have been strictly tied to the LLC, even though I had to have an LLC really to even make any sort of headway on this. So you throw in those two factors and it's like, well, look, if we do fail, and again, I kind of had reason to believe that was a realistic possibility based on the statements that I saw, then what do we do? Because now we have the real estate group coming after us. The real estate agent told me they would probably try to sue me for at least 50% of the remaining rent of the contract, which is a substantial amount of money, because at $1,650 per month, you're talking, let's see, that would be $19,800 per year. So let's say if we get 1 year into it and we have 4 years left when everything folds, then we have, we're on the hook for, at that point, about $39,600 if they sue us and the court awards that. So that was something that was huge on my mind and something that we brought up to the consultant. And that was just too much risk. I mean, in God's honest truth, that was too much risk for us at this point. We have a newborn, and our cash flows are good for us personally, but our cash flows would not be enough to sustain a business that was potentially losing money. And again, if I increase prices 20%, how do I know that the majority of people who are going there aren't going there because their drinks are so underpriced? And how do I know, by extension, I'm not going to drive off a portion of my customer base and lose sales because of that? So ultimately, it was too much risk. We did make one final offer, and the guy told us, you know, he was not willing to accept that because the other person was willing to offer substantially more than we were. And so I'm kind of frustrated and sad how things turned out, but I really do hope this new person can make it work, because I, as a customer, love that little coffee shop. So I hope they can make it work, but I have very severe doubts that they will be able to, unless they're willing to use some of their other businesses to kind of subsidize this one. But we'll see how things go. But that was the process. That was the process. And like I said, even though this failed, I did learn an awful lot, and I had a blast throughout most of this. It was stressful, but I still had a ball kind of getting to go through all of this. And I do cherish the time that I got to spend getting to know the employees on a more personal level. That honestly, I do reflect on that very positively. I am very, very glad that we had that time. So, but that was the endeavor. And like I said, unfortunately it failed, but we'll move on and see what the future holds. So with that, let's actually segue into the next portion, which is going to be 2023 show goals and the direction of the show. So 2023, at least initially, we'll see a noticeable shift in the direction of the Jeffersonian tradition. So the first part of the year is going to cover the financial world of modernity instead of looking at historical events. And based on the shows that we've done, y'all know the Jeffersonians hated banks and hated the financial economy. But the unfortunate reality is that's the economy that's pretty much come to prominence and really just taken over every aspect of our lives now. So along with this, I'm going to detail my personal investment strategy and discuss my portfolio and how we're saving for Little Miss Jeffersonian's future, because we actually have her little portfolio going as well. And then the episodes on my thoughts on young people hating capitalism will finally be coming out. It just got to a point where I kind of felt like that was more appropriate to do for 2023 because of the direction we had taken in 2022. So 2023 is going to be more about the financial stuff, and we're going to really take some deep dives into all of this. And then once the financial and stock episodes are released, we will get back to the study of the war in the long view, but that will likely not occur until sometime around April or May based on my current mapping of the upcoming episodes. And I do hate that I must address this, but we do have some bad news here. So if I am unable to convince more of the audience to become supporting listeners, the show will also become more of a hobby than a primary focus for me, because now I have too many competing interests for my time, and familial responsibilities always come first. So we have also reached a point where I have to look at going back into the regular workforce. So if you like the show and have thus far abstained from becoming a supporting listener, then I am asking you, in all sincerity, please consider a change of heart, because I cannot keep doing this show as a primary focus for only $35 a month. It's getting to a point, it's not worth the effort that I'm having to put into it. So if you are a listener and you have not become a supporting listener yet, then please consider that change of heart. The link for that is in every show notes description. So if y'all go into your podcast player, pull up the show episode description, description, there's a link down there that says become a supporting listener or something to that effect. All you got to do is click on that. And look, if you can only do 99 cents per month, hey, I appreciate it. If you can do $5 per month, hey, that's even better, because then you get access to the Ward Republic group. So I haven't shared this with y'all before, but just so you know, an objective amount, the goal I need to hit to keep doing this show as a primary focus is $500 per month in total supporting listenership contributions. I think that is a modest goal, because that would only represent 100 people at $5 per month. And I know there's more than 100 of y'all out there based on the sheer amount of plays that we get. I know there's at least 100 of y'all out there, if not more. So if we can just get 100 people at $5 per month, we've already hit the goal that I would need to keep doing this as a primary focus. Now, if you can do $10 per month, hey, that's just icing on the cake, and then we only need 50 people at $10 per month. But $5 per month, that's all I'm asking. If you want access to the Ward Republic, that is, that's all I'm asking, $5 per month. And if we can get 100 people at that level, hey, my revenue goal is met. I can keep doing this as a primary focus. So if you know anyone out there who would enjoy the show, then please share it and encourage them to support the work I put into this endeavor. And that said, I cannot say thank you enough to those of you who have already become members of the Ward Republic, and it has been an absolute pleasure getting to know y'all much more in depth through our monthly video conferences. I actually look forward to the last Friday of each month, because that's when we do them. So if you want access to that, again, all it takes is $5 per month, and I will get you added to the Ward Republic group, and we will, you know, we'll keep doing our monthly video conferences, and we'll make sure that the show stays a primary focus. So please just keep that in mind. But now that that's out of the way, let's talk my personal goals for 2023. So I hope to be, by the end of the year, at least 50% done with my master's program, again, with a focus in accounting. And as far as weight loss, I would actually still like to lose about 15 more pounds. I'm sitting at around, about 178, give or take, right now. So I would like to get down to roughly about 165. And I do want to take Little Miss Jeffersonian out kayaking at least 3 times this year. I don't know that that one will be feasible. It just kind of depends, because right now she's still only 3 months old, and who knows how she's going to take to it by the time she's 7 or 8 months old. But that is something my wife and I enjoy during the summertime. On the weekends, we do really enjoy going to some of the lakes around here and getting to go kayaking. So we try to get up really early in the morning and get out there while it's still cool and before the crowds get there. So I'm hoping that our daughter gets to experience that same joy at least 3 times this year. But again, we'll kind of see how it goes based on how she grows and how her demeanor is at that point. And lastly, I hope to have my bookkeeping business going in some capacity by the end of this year, even if it's more of a side hustle. So I will keep y'all updated on that, just in case any of you know anybody who is looking for bookkeeping services. Hopefully by the end of the year, that's something I would be able to provide if y'all wanted to go through me. So we'll keep you updated there. That is all I have for today, though. So thank you again for tuning in and for your time. And I will talk to y'all next time on the Jeffersonian Tradition.
Little Miss Jeffersonian has made her triumphant arrival. And I can tell you that raising a newborn is expensive. So if y'all don't mind contributing to our diaper fund, I would greatly appreciate that. And don't forget to help fuel the Jeffersonian Revolution by using the link in the show notes page to purchase your go backs today. And all right, with another episode in the books, thank you again for tuning in, and I will talk to y'all next time.